Hi, and welcome to this week's Three Legs, Four Wheels, F1 podcast. It's Paul here with...
Dan.
Chris.
Lee.
Oh, we're all here then.
Yep, we are.
Ah, that's good. What have we got this week? Qualifying.
It's back.
It's back.
In a complete surprise, they've done what they said they were going
to
do.
Which is what everyone wanted them to do. Fans, teams, drivers.
Everyone except Bernie.
And Jean.
Yes.
So, we're back to 2015 qualifying, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
When it got announced that it was going to happen, Chris, you had an interesting point that you brought up.
Bernie's power play. There's often talk of power play in Formula One between the rule makers, the teams, the drivers, and it seems a little bit suspicious to me that Bernie has let this one go so quickly, almost.
It hasn't been quickly, has it?
No, but it's been two races. If you think of it in real terms, the qualifying, the now binned off format of qualifying, lasted two races. The team's kicked up such a stink, and he's just gone, all right, you can have this one.
Except he hasn't exactly done that. The teams have given some ground here. What they've said is that they will look into other qualifying formats. It's just not next week.
Yeah. Which is fine, but it may be...
Which is sensible.
It is, yeah.
It's what normal people would do.
Yeah.
So, have they this 2015 thing, they haven't stated that it's going to be for the rest of the year.
It's just for China at the moment.
They're going to look at other formats later on in the year when the championship isn't at stake, and then perhaps try some more in pre-season testing next year.
When they have this F1 2016 logo, are they going to have like light or beta at the end or something?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was wondering, if Bernie has let this one go so easily, what's he expecting in return? What's the next power play that he can foresee coming that he is not going to budge on at all?
2017 rules,
possibly.
I guess.
Yeah.
Possibly. It's possible that somebody, possibly even Jean Todt, has had a little word in Bernie's ear and said, let them have this one, because if you don't, then they'll come back stronger against the 2017 rules, which a lot of people are starting to speak out against, rather.
I'm not sure I quite agree with you that giving this up was... part of a power play on Bernie's part. I think Formula One was looking ridiculous because of this.
It was. I have to agree with what you said in the previous two podcasts, Dan, about Q1 and Q2 being really exciting. Q3 was supposed to be the sharp end of qualifying, and that's where it got ruined. It didn't work for that. It worked for everything else but that bit. So I was... maybe a return to Q1, Q2 as it was at the beginning of the season, and then a Q3 2015 style, which was put forward.
But rejected by Bernie because it wasn't daft enough, I think.
No, was it not rejected by Christian Horner? Was he not the only person?
He might have been the only one to speak out against it.
He was the only one to veto it, I think. And because one person vetoed it, they had to start all over again. That was just before Toto Wolff said, if anyone disagrees with the new qualifying rules, we should crucify him.
When he became the Totonator.
He's going to come back into the podcast later on as well, I'm sure of it.
No, I wouldn't surprise
me. My good mate Toto. He'll turn up at some point.
He'll be back.
He does like to drop in. And
he does, every now and again.
Give his views.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. My theory on what Bernie's going to insist on next is that he'll bring in a rule saying once a rule has been dropped from Formula One and changed, it can't be reverted back to ever again. I call that the no-take-backsies rule.
Yeah.
that does sound plausible, but not sensible.
Mm.
Don't forget, we're talking about the way that F1's run. Sensible doesn't come into it half the time.
As I say, it sounds plausible. I wish it didn't.
I was reading a thing the other day. I didn't realise that the Concorde Agreement isn't up until 2020, and the article was explaining that it says that essentially we have just clusterfuck after clusterfuck to look forward to, until the Concord Agreement can be re-signed and things can actually be set in stone.
Yeah, because the present Concord Agreement was drawn up and signed when Formula One was going to be floated on the Singapore Stock Exchange.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So all the teams went, oh yeah, we'll sign it because we'll get most of us will get stuff all until the flotation, and then once it goes on the stock market, we'll be absolutely loaded.
Yeah.
And Ferrari went, we'll sign it because we'll be absolutely loaded before it goes on the stock market, then we'll be even more loaded. And then it didn't float.
Mm.
And now Ferrari get something like 30% of all income distributed between all the teams, something ridiculously high like that.
Is that also to do with their historic status?
Yeah, but that all got factored into what the commercial agreements for all the teams were.
Yeah.
But Ferrari had to have a bigger carrot dangled in front of them to sign it than the other teams, because they were throwing the historic status and retaining the power of veto over anything, and it's basically FIA being Ferrari International Assistance again.
Which they have been for many years.
It is crazy though, isn't it? I think it's like... a Bernie Eccleston's height away from $1 billion gets dished out, you know, in prize money every year.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can dish out £1 billion in prize money to, what is it, 20, are we 20 teams, 22 teams?
22 drivers.
Sorry, yeah.
11 teams. Well, 10 teams, because
Haas won't get any
prize money this year.
Until next year,
because you get your prize money a year after.
And so you've got $1 billion dished out between these teams, and some teams can't afford to race. It's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, it is, really.
Especially, was it the Business Insider, I think it was, in the last couple of weeks, wrote an article on the revenue in F1 and how it generates so much money, but then it doesn't appear to go particularly anywhere. So
no.
Whose pockets is it lining exactly?
Well, it's not Sauber's, because the story's coming out again that they've fallen behind with the wages for their Swiss employees for March.
There's 300 staff again in Switzerland, which was in January they weren't paid, or was it Feb?
I think it was February's they didn't get on time, and then they've done the same for March's as well.
Yeah.
It's when you're talking figures like that, and the teams don't even get the money to pay the wages.
Yeah,
well, Felipe Nasr is bringing X amount of $1 million with basically a full team sponsorship with the Banco do Brasil.
Yeah,
plastered all over the car. They changed their livery because of the sponsorship.
Yeah,
and Ericsson's bringing in a not insubstantial amount as well.
That's it as well. You really got to question where the money is going.
Yeah. Do you think there's a case to be made as well that you're because the money isn't there for the lower teams, that maybe on an engineering level, any engineer that's talented enough to be in, like in motorsport, wants to be in something like Formula One. You know, they want to be at the top of what they can get to. So they're going to go there, and even if they're not earning what they think they're worth, they're still part of Formula One. But on the business side of it, where you've just got businessmen that are going in to run teams, do you think because the money's there, money isn't there for the smaller teams, they're not actually getting the brain power that's needed to run these teams?
I would imagine that on both the executive and the engineering side, you've got the same draw. Being an executive at a Formula One team is going to look incredible on your CV.
It's going to look incredible until it goes out of business.
That very rarely matters.
Well, maybe, yeah. I suppose there's always somebody else to blame. But,
I mean, yeah, there's never, when teams go bust, it's never one person's fault. It's always made out to be a catalogue of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've a funny feeling, though, if Selva go out of business, there is one lady which looks very much at fault for some of the decisions.
I don't know, because as we were saying last week, I think in her next interview she would be in a very good position to say, well, Sauber should have gone out of business in 2011.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, we've kept them going this long.
Yeah.
It's a miracle we've been able to keep it going this long.
Yeah.
We may need to look at restructuring the finances later in the year.
Mm.
It could be something along those lines that we hear from them. But yeah, I mean, teams at the bottom are struggling, and they're using as much of the power as they can to get what they want out of the sport. And what they want, go back to the original point, is the 2015 qualifying format returned, which isn't really the 2015 qualifying format, because that's been around for what, like, five years, not more.
Yeah, it's the knockout qualifying rather than the elimination qualifying.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
it's the one that works.
Mm.
The one that we all understand.
Yeah, none of this aggregate nonsense.
No, that was a bit silly.
Yeah, I mean, they managed to drag that out for six races before everyone went, this is stupid.
Mm. Yeah, well, this one only lasted two.
For now.
For now.
Yeah, we'll see what happens at the end of the season, because like I say, if they they reserve the right to change things about once there's no championships at stake.
I wonder when they're going to define that point, because generally, even in the last race of the season, even when first place in the championship has been decided,
the fourth place
you're fighting for championships lower down the table, and the people lower down the table aren't going to want to say, yeah, let's start playing about with the rules.
Yeah.
It could mean the difference between a point and no points,
which could make the difference between your team surviving and not surviving.
Yeah,
because only the top 10 teams get paid, and there's 11 teams this season.
Yeah.
So it could well mean that if they start playing about with things, one of the back end of the grid teams could well suffer.
Yeah. See, that's ridiculous as well, isn't it? If if a new team comes in, the last team shouldn't get like nothing.
I mean, you get your transport costs paid.
Providing you score points.
Yeah.
You have to score points in order to get your transport costs paid.
Which is why in the seasons where Minardi managed to scrape a point, the parties there apparently were legendary.
Yeah.
Because they could afford to have them.
Yeah.
Yeah, party like Andrew WK in a good mood.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems crazy to me that you know, you're part of the championship. You know, you're part of the show, and therefore you deserve some of the TV money.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, closest analogy is Premier League football, and with the new TV deal that comes in from the next season that starts in August later on this year, the team that finishes bottom will actually get more money next season than whoever wins it this current season.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that really is crazy.
Yeah, is money corrupting sport?
We're
getting a bit Channel 4 on this, aren't we?
We are a bit.
But I'd also argue that maybe
PBS for our American listeners.
I mean, this would never happen, like, and it's completely impossible for it to happen in Formula 1.
So if it's a stupid idea, then it probably will.
But
Bernie,
no, it's,
stop
no, it's
listening
not a,
now.
It's not a stupid idea, that's why it won't happen. If you look at the teams as assets of Formula 1, you know, like we say, parts of the show, then essentially the TV rights, if all those teams are part of a show that's being put on, should just be divided equally. Ferrari is still going to make a fuck ton of money because they're fucking Ferrari. You know, and the money's still going to come in from the top teams, from sponsors, you know, if they're there on the top step of the podium. But so realistically, if you're paying a cast, essentially, it should just be divided.
I mean, Ferrari, Mercedes and Renault are in Formula 1 to sell cars, and Ferrari and Mercedes will make more from selling a car than Renault will from selling one car.
Yeah.
If you believe a certain former BBC employee, Ferrari are very good at selling hats and teddy bears and not very much else.
Well, yes. I was going to say let's talk about something a bit cheerier, but
it's not really.
No, it's Jacques Villeneuve.
Who's not uncheery, but he's not particularly...
You've heard his album.
Yeah, well.
We've acquired a lot of new listeners. We'll play a snippet.
Yeah.
because you know it's just not true. Don't say it, baby. Well, you know it's up to you. Don't say it, darling, 'cause you're just wasting time. Don't say it, baby, as you know this ain't my crime. Don't say it, baby, you know I don't like that sound. I know that you're just fooling around.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, you didn't have
We promised not to do that again until...
until the next time we do.
Till next year, or until we need to cover up something Lee said that may cause us legal trouble.
But he's had a few words to say.
Yes, outspoken driver Jacques Villeneuve has spoken out about drivers speaking out and said they shouldn't.
Pretty much, yeah. He's told the drivers to shut up and get on with driving and to let the rulemakers make the rules. Which I can see both sides of the argument here. Mm-hmm. There's a GPDA, Grand Prix Drivers Association, for a reason.
Yeah.
But when drivers individually speak out against rules, I can sort of see why that doesn't reflect well on the sport.
I don't think the rules, as we've said this before anyway, like, apart from safety, I don't think the drivers should have any say in the sporting rules. I don't think the teams should. I think rules and regulations should be handed to teams and
adhered to.
Yeah. You don't like the rules. Oh well, we'll go somewhere else. Go Formula E.
Hmm.
So.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just looking for responses for what Villeneuve's had to say from other fans.
That's obvious because
it's an opinion divider.
Yeah. No, the only reaction the internet can have nowadays is fury. So, you know, it's people are only ever negative when they have a faceless wall to shout from behind.
I know what you mean, but it's I can see Jacques Villeneuve's argument, and he is in a way, and what you just said there as well, Lee, is actually correct. Although, like you say, safety is something the driver should be able to speak out about. And also, you'll always have the questions from journalists asking drivers what it's like, and you get responses like Fernando Alonso's last year, these cars are no fun to drive.
Yeah.
You will always have, like, Lewis Hamilton, he put it out on social media first before anything else, but when Raikkonen tested the Halo, please don't let this happen, it's the worst modification to happen in the history of Formula One. You know, so, even if, you're always going to get an outspoken driver, even if all the drivers aren't outspoken.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want drivers to become robots as well. You still want them to have a personality. Say, don't ask me, ask the team.
Yeah, when they've got the media asking the question, what do you think of the new qualifying format? The fans seem to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expect the drivers to say, oh, it's not my business to talk about qualifying format.
If it had been Pastor Maldonado that asked, what do you think of the new qualifying format, Pastor?
We're going to push as hard
as we can, like we do in every race.
Yeah, well, that's it, and it's, you've got to have drivers with personalities, because otherwise every media interview would be don't ask me, I'm just here to drive the car.
No, don't get me wrong. That's like let people talk. You know, that's the thing about opinions. Everybody's got one, but
opinions are like arseholes. You've all got one, but be careful how you take it out in public.
In fact, no, oh dear. No.
Equally as dangerous, be careful what you put into one. But
yeah.
The thing with it is, like, it's grand deal to what do you think of the new qualifying? It's fucking shit. That's fine. Absolutely fine. The problem I've got is the drivers getting together and trying to force rules upon the rulemakers. That's the issue. It's not having a personal opinion. Because as soon as an entity gets together, it's not a personal opinion then, is it? It's a collective, and then a collective has power. Yeah. And I don't believe they should have power and influence in the rules.
Well, I don't know. I mean, as far as the whole team complaints over qualifying goes, that wasn't the drivers getting together. That was all the teams getting together.
Not the team bosses.
No, that was
not the drivers' association letter that was sent to Bernie. That came from Jensen, Alex Wirtz,
and Sebastian Vettel.
Oh, from Jensen, I was fine then. It was probably right.
Yeah, the three drivers that signed that were the directors of the Grand Prix Drivers Association. The head, Alexander Wirtz, and the two directors who are current drivers, Sebastian Vettel and Jensen Button.
But they were signing that
on behalf of the GPDA.
Yeah.
One other point that Villeneuve made, and this is possibly the most sensible thing that he's ever said, when he was talking about all the recent rule changes and rule changes back and whatever. In all the noble sports like tennis and football, the rules haven't changed in 100 years, even when it's boring and people respect it. Some days you'll have great qualifying sessions and some days boring qualifying, but that's the way it goes. I think he's got a point there.
No, I disagree, because in football and tennis, the changes in technology over the past 100 years have not been anything like the scope of the changes in technology in Formula One.
Which is true, but I think the point that he's trying to make there is the basic non-technological part of it, like how do you decide who goes in what order on the grid?
The format.
You know, the basic principle of the sport is still the same. Drive fastest to win.
Yeah.
Football, score more goals. Tennis, score more points.
I thought the basic principle was drive as fast as you can without using too much fuel and burning your tyres up too quickly to win.
Yeah, drive as fast as you can to win. But driving as fast as you can to win, if you're driving recklessly, then you're not going to be able to drive as fast as you can to win, are you?
Drive as fast as you can within certain preset constraints that are imposed upon you by the actual technology available from the engine that you've got and the rules related. Oh, God, what happened to drive as fast as you can to win? Yeah, fastest guy wins the race.
Mostly.
Getting a headache. Can we move on?
Yeah, of course we can.
Thank you. Lee, tell you what, save Formula One for us.
Again.
This is scary territory.
Yeah.
Lee, this is scary territory.
Yeah, this is Lee being right for the third time.
Well, right for the third time and having all of us actually agree with him and launching something from us to all of our listeners that I genuinely believe is going to work a treat. Lee, go for it.
I need help. And I need help from our listeners.
We need help.
Well, United Front.
Well, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, this is the Three Legs, Four Wheels Podcasters Association. It's just you're signing the letter.
Yeah. I've got a pen for our viewers watching on radio.
But not in black and white.
The idea being that whenever you hear various people talk about what fans want from Formula One, and again what I was saying before about the vocal minority being the type of people that say, oh, if this rule comes into effect, I'm not watching Formula One in 2017, because 9 times out of 10 those people are fucking liars and they will be the first people to tune in. But what I want is genuine ideas about what's wrong with Formula One, but more importantly, like, what's right with Formula One.
Yeah, fans' opinions is what you want.
Yeah, and we can compile a list of what you think Formula One should be and where you think it should go. And if you want to write a short list of 10, so it's 10's a nice number, of rules that you think for the 2017 formula that you'd like to see implemented that you think would make the show better, over the course of the year we will then compile a list of the best and most popular ideas to make up our fictitious rule set, and we'll kind of get a benchmark of where we think people want Formula One to go. The idea of essentially all the other media outlets, maybe not all of them, but there's always a vested interest with them to keep other teams sweet. I've probably said things to upset pretty much everyone in the paddock since we've started doing this podcast.
Except Jensen.
I fucking love that man.
But you've said things to scare him.
Yeah. So we want to be your voice, and we want to help everyone and fans in general have a voice somewhere.
So yeah, so the bottom line is, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what you like, what you don't like about F1,
yeah.
And we're using the hashtag.
Your
voice in F1.
Thank you, Flux.
So hashtag your voice in F1. Look out for it on Twitter.
Tweet us with that. Email us on threelegs4wheels@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You can go onto the website, threelegs4wheels.com,
mm-hmm.
and leave comments.
Tweet me, @Lee_drummer on Twitter. And if you've any suggestions or ideas what we're doing with this, just let me know, and hopefully we can make a small segment of it every week.
And if it grows big enough, who knows, we might actually be able to lobby Formula One. Like, look, this is what the fans want. It's
yeah.
anti what Formula One is doing. It's reaching out through social media and the internet to the fans and saying, what do you want?
Without it being a 40-page document that you have to go through.
Correct, with rules and articles by the FIA. We're four guys sat in a living room recording a podcast who love the sport and wanted to continue with the same as you, and we want your help to make it better.
And thus ends the party political broadcast. Or party political. No, it's something that needs doing, because I think it's a worldwide sport, but there isn't a worldwide voice.
No.
There is now.
So why don't we try and become it?
Yes.
We know we've got listeners worldwide. I've seen
tweets
from the US, from Australia.
Yeah.
We've got listeners in China. We've got listeners
Germany.
In Germany. We've got listeners in Peru.
Yeah.
South Africa. We were in the top 10 podcast chart in Slovenia.
Yeah. So hello in Slovenia. I don't know what hello is in Slovenian. I'm really sorry, but hello.
For instance, just so people that are listening know that the numbers for our podcast, that we have enough listeners every week that when for anyone that goes on F1 Fanatic, they have polls now and again, and they had a poll for the best drivers not in F1 at the minute. That's what it was. And I looked down at the total number of votes for it, and there's only 900 votes. We have enough listeners per week to eclipse
and also,
that sort of thing if everybody gets involved,
yeah,
and everyone has an opinion.
Just while we're on the subject, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to us, because last week's show was the first one that's actually gone over 5,000 listens,
which is great.
Which
thank
is great, and we thank you all individually, but it'd take an entire show to do that.
Yeah,
and you'd get bored.
Yeah.
And if your name got read out first, you'd have nothing to listen to.
Yeah.
So we don't have all of your names.
That's true.
And on a poll as well, to go back to what Lee was saying, on a poll, it's multiple choice. Your opinion might not be on that.
No, you're already being dictated to.
Yeah, you're being dictated to. Here are three choices. Of these three choices, you know, you might be allergic to fish. And the poll could be, what's your favourite fish? Salmon, trout or cod? Well, it doesn't matter, because you can't have any of them anyway. So what's the point in entering the poll? This is your opportunity to actually speak out and say what you want to see in Formula One. Using the hashtag, your voice in F1.
Because F1 needs a Leevolution.
Very good.
Oh, you kept that one quiet in the planning meeting.
And do you know why? Do you know why it needs a Leevolution? Because without a Leevolution, it can't Leevolve.
Right, next. Part news, part mailbag, really.
Yep.
Yeah, we have a comment from Benno the Fiberman on the site this week. It was a story that we actually...
Hi, Ben.
Hi, Benno. He is in Holland. And
Ouch, Ben.
He pointed out a story that I certainly missed, and I think the rest of you guys did as well. It was up from ESPN. According to Mercedes, Toro Rosso has the least powerful engine on the grid.
Well, according to Toro Rosso, according to ESPN and Mercedes info, where does the info come from? Is it GPS?
GPS traces, yes.
And now, do Mercedes have access to the GPS of all of the cars?
From the looks of things, yes. ESPN is saying, much of Toro Rosso's impressive start to the year has been attributed to its Ferrari power unit having more power than Renault and Honda. But data gathered from GPS readings by Mercedes suggests that all the 2016 power units are already ahead of the year-old Ferrari.
Sorry, I know, I should have mentioned this when we were talking the briefing thing. I know exactly that they've all got GPS on them.
Because the driver tracker.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it cost me £1,500 when I was away.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, with the driver tracker, I mean, is it that accurate that you can tell...
Do the teams get to see more than the actual broadcast feed of the driver tracker? Because we've got the option of watching it on the Red Button service on Sky, but you don't actually see the driver tracker app. You get a picture of the driver tracker and that's it. You just get to see the circuit map with dots going around it and what drivers what. Is there extra data there that's available to the teams?
There must be data making those dots be where they are.
Yeah. Yes, and do the teams get to see that data?
And is it fine-grained enough to be able to work out what power they're producing from those dots?
So all I'm doing is basically playing devil's advocate and speculating as to whether the data gathered by Mercedes would be the same data gathered by Sauber. Would it be the same data gathered by Ferrari?
Perhaps what Mercedes are doing is they've got access to the full data feed, which all the teams will have, and they are comparing speed and acceleration on certain sections of the track with what their engine is doing as a benchmark, and they can see what teams are faster and slower where, because they will have created a neutral reading.
I've got some data, the data of common sense. Renault's engine is better than last year's engine. Honda's engine is better than last year's engine.
Well,
to be fair, I'd argue that apart from the fact it kept blowing up when they were doing like dyno tests and stuff like that, it was probably horsey wise better than the Renault engine. Just they fucked the ERS up, didn't they? Was it ERS?
Yes, yeah. That's what Jensen lost at Bahrain, wasn't it?
Obviously, it's not. Obviously, the new Ferrari engine's quicker. Obviously, the new Mercedes engine's quicker. So it only leaves last year's engine. You know, if you're going to rock up to a Grand Prix with anything from last year, it's going to be slower than this year's model of pretty much everybody's.
Which is A, common sense, and B, if correct, and is proven by the GPS to be that's how they've managed to work it out one way or the other. Does that not make the fact that Max Verstappen and Carlos Sainz both overtook Red Bulls in Bahrain a little bit embarrassing for Red Bull?
If they've got a better engine in the car, then yes.
Yeah, they overtook them, but they didn't stay there, did they?
No, they didn't. But on track racing, on slightly fresher tyres, admittedly.
Yeah, that's how there's different factors.
There's the whole package you've got to think about. It's not just the engine, it's the car.
Yep. Absolutely.
Maybe there is more to this size zero stuff than meets the eye.
Yeah.
Maybe there is. Toro Rosso, we know, does look quite size looks zero.
Hang on, how can there be more to size zero than meets the eye? Because size zero is as small as you can get, and if there's more than meets the eye, then it's not size zero, it's just well disguised. I'm confusing myself now.
Right.
So I think size zero is a metaphor.
Yeah, so shall we move on?
Yes.
We've had another email from Doug in Texas.
Hello, hey, Doug.
Hi, Doug. Hi again, Doug.
Coming regular listener there.
Yeehaw.
He is. thanks for your comments on the fact that we're getting the audio sorted, which will be even more sorted this week because I won't accidentally delete one of the sound files.
Oops.
Well, it wasn't me. It was my laptop crashed.
Yeah,
it was.
Was it he blames their tools?
The really good workman.
Yeah.
Bernie Eccleston.
Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, he just wanted to clarify a couple of things on the pricing for Circuit of the Americas.
Which we were discussing last week, when he emailed in.
Yeah, the $5,000 was actually for a 3-day VIP ticket. But grandstand tickets for race day are still $1,300.
Just for race day?
Just for race day for wow. the things. And
yeah, race day tickets for where?
Grandstand. Main grandstand, pit straight, Circuit of the Americas.
Right, I think that's pretty standard, though.
I think that's significantly more expensive than the top flight ticket at Silverstone.
I think the cheapest grandstand ticket is £600, and it's
just for race day.
And it's in Malaysia.
No, I'm pretty sure you can get a grandstand ticket. What do you mean, pit straight?
I mean start finish straight. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Because so that £1,300, I guarantee that will be pit straight.
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah, no, it is. That's what
I don't think that's extortionate.
But for a race that's trying to attract as many fans as possible.
And still trying to build this audience.
Yeah, for a sport that isn't as popular in the US as it is worldwide.
Well, I think if you read on through Doug's emails, he's not explaining the sort of choking effect that the circuits had placed upon it.
Exactly, because
this is the interesting part for me.
Yeah, because he sent a link to some details of what it's basically costing the Circuit of the Americas to host the race. In 2012, the fee that they paid to FOM, CVC, Bernie, whoever, for hosting the Grand Prix was $25 million. 3 years on, last year it was $33 million, and by 2022, it will be $58 million to host the race.
Which is not in line with inflation.
Yeah. Definitely not in line with inflation, and their state aid has taken a massive hit.
Yeah.
Which, it's a $6 million shortfall this year, which they've made up by selling Taylor Swift tickets.
Yeah.
What are they gonna have to do? Because obviously, you know, are they gonna have to get like a personal appearance by, I don't know, Jim Morrison, who's been dead since 1971?
Yeah, it's a tough one, and I wouldn't want to be the manager of that circuit, charged with the job of here's a lot less money, bring more people to a circuit. And do that exponentially every year as the gap grows bigger in finances, make us the right amount of money and bring more people to the circuit.
Doug did mention in his mail some of the ways which the circuit is trying to pull extra money in, which
is that something to do with car parking?
Yeah, advertising general parking at $60, and then when you turn up charging you $100 and saying they can only take cash and it's got to be that much.
See, this is why we've gone with Lee's idea about your voice in F1, mm-hmm. because this is ridiculous.
Yeah, and
this might not be Formula One itself that's done this, but it's a knock-on effect of the sport trying to get as much money as possible, choking the fans essentially who are turning up to watch the race. That is extortion, and it's ridiculous. And it might be the circuit that have put the parking charges up, but they have to recoup the money because the sport is charging them so much.
It's also the sort of thing that if Doug hadn't got in touch with us to say it, that
we would
just
know.
It's not the kind of thing that we'd know.
Yeah.
Because
it might not be the kind of thing a lot of our listeners know about.
No.
Mm. But yeah, it's. I mean, he goes on to say quite a bit in the email. Things like because of the weather, a lot of the food stalls had closed last year.
Yeah, because if you remember, it was terrible.
It was horrendous weather.
Many storms coming in and going. And at one point, did they not evacuate the circuit at one point because of a
thunderstorm?
Yeah,
a
thunderstorm was passing overhead.
But it appears to be having a knock-on effect for other events that are there, because the MotoGP was there yesterday, and the British commentators were saying that the crowds were massively down on the last 2 years' worth of races, even though Keanu Reeves turned up again.
Well, it would be interesting then to know if this same sort of like anti-customer like practices have been going on for MotoGP races as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
The other interesting comparison will be what's happening at the Mexican circuit, which I believe is owned by the same...
Yeah.
Owners.
Yes, it is. Mm. Which is, of course, not actually that far away. And when they first launched the Circuit of the Americas in 2012, I believe they call it Circuit of the Americas because it's quite central to all of the Americas. And now they've got a circuit in Mexico, which has held Formula One previously and is now holding it again. Is the interest waning a little bit in the Texan circuit? I hope not, because I really like it.
It's a really good circuit to watch, isn't it?
I'd love to go there and watch a race.
I think the turnout for the American Grand Prix this year with the American team will be massive.
Let's hope so. Haas F1 have done extremely well, as we've already mentioned, their first two races. And if they continue, maybe the support will build and bring numbers back to Austin.
Certainly Haas got potential.
Then, of course, there's a Las Vegas question to answer, because that keeps cropping up in the press. It did last week, just before we recorded. There's been more about, yes, there's going to be a race in Vegas at some point. Still nobody's got any idea where. Is it going to be at this... what is it they call it? The Las Vegas Speedway?
I will host a Formula One Grand Prix in my living room before that happens.
You've just got a new couch. You don't want to get sort of tired.
You haven't got $30 million a year.
No, but
$30 million this year, $70 million next year.
It was kind of more of a point where I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, because we had the New Jersey Grand Prix, didn't we? It was never materialised.
That kind of fell apart.
There was talk of the California circuit to replace Laguna Seca.
Yeah, yeah.
Long Beach isn't up to F1 these days.
No.
I think there's IndyCar there this week.
Watkins Glen, there is something happening with Watkins Glen, because it's having a makeover. And they think that it will be ratified by the FIA for Formula One races, but again, will the circuit owners have the funds? Will they be able to convince the powers that be that they can hold a Formula One race again after however many years it's been since?
Doug actually says in his email, I think the last hope we have is a race at Watkins Glen again. That would be nice.
Right. Okay. So Doug's actually considering another race in Watkins Glen.
Yeah.
Look, when you think about it, for a modest podcast as we are, when we look at the numbers and stuff like that, and we look at the emails we're getting from America,
yeah,
the interest's clearly there.
Of course it is.
You know, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It is worldwide. I mean, we even had a tweet from a Penguin last week.
If I can just go off on a mild...
His favourite driver's Kimmy.
If I can just go off on a mild tangent just for 1 second, we talk about Watkins Glen there. In Bahrain, it transpired this week, the owner of the Imola circuit met with Bernie Eccleston. Now, we know what we said about Monza being under threat in recent months.
Last week, Imola, or whoever their representative is, voiced again that they are immediately ready to
host an F1 Grand Prix. Either as the San Marino Grand Prix or perhaps as the Italian Grand Prix.
Well,
the circuit is actually in Italy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would anyone else apart from me prefer?
Yeah, but don't forget the Nürburgring hosted the Luxembourg Grand Prix.
It did indeed. Yes.
Let's all hang on.
Do we have to do the Baku joke?
Let's all take a second to remember where the European Grand Prix is being held this year. Afghanistan.
European Grand Prix was held at Donington once.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the only F1 race that's ever been at Donington.
Really?
93?
Yeah.
Famous race.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Senna in the typical British rain.
Yeah. remember the British Grand Prix, what was it, 99, when it nearly got held up by snow? When they moved it to the start of the calendar.
Had it
at the beginning of April.
Yeah, and I think it took marshals 2 days to push everyone out of the car park.
Yeah.
Had to get tractors in and everything from surrounding farms.
Yeah.
That didn't reflect well at all on.
Yeah, it changed back to its traditional time the following year.
When was that?
I think that was 99.
That's when Schumacher broke his leg.
Oh, 98 then.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it was there that year or not. Wasn't it 1999 where all the cars got stuck?
Schumacher broke his leg in 1999 in Silverstone. I'm sure that was...
I was on the corner when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was 1998, the year of the rain and the cars getting stuck.
I can't, because I remember being in the car park, because we went in a friend of ours, Land Rover, so everything was groovy getting out of the circuit.
Yeah, the Grand Prix was in April, the last car came out of the car park in November.
Yeah, and we were driving past somebody else that was that had got stuck in exactly the same Land Rover as we were in, and my mate that was driving the car went out the window and explained to the guy in the other Land Rover how to turn his diff lock on.
I remember I played at a gig once, talking of cars getting stuck, where they had to send a lorry to tow out a transit van that had been sent to tow out a Mitsubishi Shogun, which had been sent to tow out a Nissan Micra from the field.
Why did they send a transit van? Transit vans are the worst. Then this mild tangent has become.
This mild tangent has become a big tangent. But yeah, there was a lot of towing going on.
Yeah.
It's like a four-wheeled Russian rescue dog.
going back to Imola, yeah, they have updated the paddock and off-track facilities to come up to F1 standards. So this is why they're courting Bernie all of a sudden.
Mm.
And well, it's a historic track.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah,
and of course it's got Enzo Ferrari in the name, so they're going to want it there.
Yeah.
Anderson's going to turn around and say, and where's the circuit? No, not Europe.
Isn't it the Autodromo of Dino and Enzo Ferrari?
Enzo and Dino.
Yeah, Enzo and Dino Ferrari.
Yes. So, will we see the San Marino Grand Prix back, or will it be Italian? Italian Grand Prix once.
We'll see.
I hope so. I prefer that to Imola.
To Monza, you mean?
Sorry, Monza, yeah.
No, we'll see.
I prefer the circuit. I think it's a better racing circuit.
But again, going back to those emails, it has to be right for the fans.
Yeah, because if the fans struggle to get there,
yeah,
and be there, and
see, that's the other that's the other thing that would be in Monza's favour. I don't know what it's like getting to
Imola,
but Monza. The train stops outside the gate. You get out of the train, and there's a sign saying "Welcome to Monza," and you go in.
Yeah,
so it's one of the easiest Formula One tracks I've ever been to.
Yeah. Plus, the train runs right from Milan Airport, does it not? So you could fly to Milan Airport, hop on the train, pretty much next.
The
to
train's
Milan Airport.
If you've got a Grand Prix ticket,
yeah,
you can get on a Monza train to the
and
circuit.
And you go from Milan to Monza, get off the train, and you're there.
Yeah,
unless you're flying Ryanair, then it's Milan Luton.
Yeah,
yeah.
And but I tell you what, there's some pretty mean looking civil guards walking around.
Oh, it's Italy. There always is. Yeah.
Mm. And there was they'd obviously drafted in
Carabinieri.
Well, yeah, no worse. They drafted in like mercs. By the looks of it, there was just people walking around just in all black uniforms, and you're just like, these are private security contractors they've got in here, and you're like, you would mess me up so quickly.
No, you're a conspiracy theory, not you're wandering around looking at the men in black and wondering what they knew that we weren't meant to.
I keep forgetting what I thought I did not see.
Right, smooth segue alert. Talking of tracks that it's easy to get to on a train with a station outside, that's the situation at Shanghai, and it's the Chinese Grand Prix this week.
That is a smooth segue.
Can I make
there
a point?
I'd like to say
something about the segue shenanigans on this show.
Go.
Segways aren't fucking cool when we fucking poster them everywhere. It's like we have big lights up saying segue this way.
Listeners, well, we're about to be really smooth.
Anyway,
we've got more fourth wall jokes than fucking Deadpool.
Anyway, Chinese Grand Prix. Let's look forward to this.
Let's do a bit of a preview for the Chinese Grand Prix. We don't know anything. There you go. Preview done.
Sorry, just quickly, before we do this, did anyone happen to see Felipe Massa's Vine or Periscope, or whatever it was, the other day?
No.
He was in his living room, or I take it what was his living room, or his den, or the
hotel room, perhaps.
No, because he had two massive tellies hooked up,
mm-hmm,
with two PlayStations and two racing wheels and two racing seats, and he was sat there teaching his son the Formula One circuits and live streaming him teaching how to go around the track. He seemed very, very proud of his son. I can only imagine that he went onto the hard tyre like 8 times and he started on pole and finished 19th.
led the race for four yeah. laps.
That's my boy, little Felipe.
Yeah.
What is it, Filipino?
Yeah.
He calls him. No, it's something like that because he was in a race with him last season. I think he calls him Filipino.
Yeah. Brazilian is little Felipe.
Yeah. So, China. Williams are saying that aerodynamic performance is tested at Shanghai.
Mm-hmm. So is that Williams' way of saying we're pretty screwed?
Yeah, pretty much. Tyres for this week are the same as what we've had in the last two races, so it's medium softs and super softs.
Apparently we could see the cars going in again as soon as lap 5, because the tyre strategy is going to be really aggressive.
Yeah, they said that in Bahrain, but they didn't end up first tyre change, I think it was lap 10, I think, standard.
Mm.
So it was a little bit longer than expected, but China is pretty hard on its tyres.
It's hot as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you're hard on your tyres in China and you've got the super softs on, yeah, you might not be out there very long.
Which is interesting because I've got Williams tyre strategy here, and you know how in Bahrain they decided to go ultra conservative and
they've gone ultra aggressive.
They've gone ultra aggressive because Bottas has gone for 2 sets of mediums, 4 softs, and 7 super softs. And Massa has 1 set of medium, 5 soft, and 7 super soft.
Mm. So are they trying to make up for lack of aerodynamic performance?
Sounds
with
like it, doesn't it?
Lots of pit stops.
And fast tyres.
And fast tyres, but lots of pit stops.
Yeah.
I wonder how long the time spent in pit lane is at that circuit.
Is it about 25 seconds, I think. It's quite a longish.
Because it's got that little sort of S shape.
Where
Lewis beached himself in his debut season.
Yeah.
When all he needed to do was, what was it? Was it top 2 when he'd win the title?
Yeah.
Seems a strange one then, because you'd think if you spend an awful long time in pit lane, it's not going to be the sort of race that you're going to want to make 52 stops, is it?
We'll see how that plays out.
But it would appear that Williams had decided to go aggressive on this. And of course, tyre strategies are effectively back to normal and back to what was chosen pre-season now, because the doctor because they'd chosen this particular tyre strategy
before
the qualifying changed, and now the qualifying's changed back. This is going to be the first time this season with all the teams we're actually seeing their tyre strategy
with what they
thought they'd be able to run.
It's a good point.
So we'll see. We'll get a clearer picture of who benefited the most from the screwed up qualifying.
Mm. Do you think we're going to see anything better from Ferrari this weekend, or is it a case of Ferrari are better and they're closer to Mercedes but just not close enough?
It's pretty much what Nico Rosberg has said.
Oh, is it?
Ferrari are better. They're pretty close to Mercedes. We don't know how close they are, but it doesn't look like they're close enough. That's pretty much what he said.
Physically sick that I've nearly fucking agreed with Nico Rosberg.
Mm.
You'll get over it.
Yeah.
Chuck your toys out of the print. Hang on, no, he doesn't.
Hang on a second. So are we going to see another Rosberg win, do we think, in China? He's won there before. Was the circuit, was it last year, where he complained that Lewis slowed him down?
Yeah, it was there last year when he said that Lewis was going too slow for him to overtake.
Yeah, which made any sense.
Then, and makes even less now.
Mm.
So if Rosberg can pick another win up here, or even just beat Hamilton, he doesn't need to win the race, really. I think he's then putting, no matter how cool Lewis's demeanour is, he's putting pressure on Lewis.
Which is what he needs to do for himself.
Yeah.
And for the good of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lewis is claiming that going into this weekend, he's in the best place that he's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Mm,
I saw a picture, he was in Stansted Airport, I think.
Oh, right, I was going to say, what club?
Do you know what, I don't understand the calm Lewis bit at the minute. I understand why he's doing it.
No need to panic.
Yeah. But what did we say at the beginning of the season about Mercedes? It's the art of war.
It is.
Yeah.
If you're strong, appear weak. If you are weak, appear strong.
Mm-hmm. But he's appearing strong. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
He may be weak.
But Nico is also appearing strong.
No,
but
he's appearing.
Nico is being strong.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, his headline quote from
Mercedes
is, "I head into this weekend on a massive high."
Fair enough, if that's
well,
how
he...
Was that a quote from Nico or Lewis? Because it might mean totally different things.
That quote was accredited to Nico, so...
Yeah, but with Lewis, it would mean something completely different.
Nico says, "It's great to start the season in such a positive way, but I'm just taking things step by step, race by race, and targeting a lot more wins to come."
You've been talking to Claudio Ranieri, then?
I think pretty much. Yeah, total away from F1 and back to football. Congratulations, Leicester, on your top four guaranteed finish. Although Ranieri won't say that they're in with a chance of winning the Premier League yet, even though they only need three more wins.
No.
As part of the Your Voice for F1, if you don't want to hear anything about fucking football, let us know.
Yeah. Or soccer, to our American friends.
Yeah. And if you do, if you're an American listener and you do want to hear about football, Three Legs Fourth Down comes back this week.
There you go. Nice.
That's
plug.
Not soccer, that's American
rugby.
I said
football to our American listeners.
American rugby.
Yes, dear. So, I think what we can get from China is it's tough on tyres and it's tough on the causes of tyres. I mean, it's tougher on tyres when the weather's colder. And it looks like it's going to be a cold race this weekend.
So quite hazy as well.
Yeah.
We've had a few wet Chinas as well, haven't we? A
couple of wet Chinas, I think, within the last few...
In the last few years we have, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But I think the main problem there, I think it was Pirelli that said this, is it's nearly always unpredictable.
It's nearly always unpredictable?
Yeah, I'm trying to work out...
It's nearly always
unpredictable.
Works 50% of the time.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost unique,
yeah.
Literally.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
Yeah, it's... We always say that races are difficult to call beforehand. This one is... This season's proving very difficult to call, but... This one's very knife-edgy, sort of. Is season starting to take shape a little bit? But would you go Rosberg? Is it?
But can you say the season's starting to
this time
take
last year,
shape during the flyaway races?
Well, this time last year, we were quite certain. We were like, it probably looks like Lewis Hamilton's going to win again. Whereas now, we're not sure what's really going to happen up front. We don't know if Ferrari are going to be able to mount the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Because they haven't really shown us yet what they can.
Well, we haven't seen two Ferraris finishing a race yet.
No. We only saw one start of the race last time.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see what the starts are like as well. Because
Lewis Hamilton's had two terrible starts. Mm-hmm. Nico Rosberg has had one terrible and one mediocre start.
Yeah.
Just happened to be better than the one man who's in front of him.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it's funny that going into the last race, we thought, well, Ferrari seemed to have a strong starting system. So surely the worst thing you can then say to your drivers is, if you get a good start, you should be in front of the Mercedes. All you need to do is get a good start, not a bad one.
A good one.
You're instantly putting pressure on your drivers.
Yeah, it's like, don't knock that cup off the table. Whatever you do, don't knock that cup. Walk around the table, don't knock that cup off.
Kapow.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Oh, the thing to remember with the starts in China is the very tight and long first turn. Because, in Pirelli's words, it's almost a complete circle.
Turn one is almost a complete circle. Turn two is then that's very tight hairpin, sort of left.
Yeah.
And you know, it's very similar to sort of Malaysia setup. Turn one and two.
Yeah, I think we're going to see. We're not going to see 22 cars finish the first lap.
What's the shortest straight in China?
The shortest
pack.
And as part of the Your Voice in F1, if you don't want to hear about wrestling...
Don't turn my weapon against me.
where was I? Oh, yes. Pirelli not making sense. One quite amazing stat that they do give. Around 80% of the lap is spent cornering.
80%?
Yes.
Well, Dan has a track map up here right in front of us.
I'm just holding that up for the listeners now.
Yeah. And anyone who's not familiar with the Shanghai circuit,
it looks a bit like a cat that's fallen over.
It does a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, 80% of around 80% of the lap is spent cornering, obviously, except for that long 1 kilometre straight.
Which must be the 20% of the lap that they're not.
That and the other long straight.
Well, it's only really sort of
long.
So I would say that
start finish straight and that one and that's it. Really. The rest of it is cornering.
13 to 14 is quite a long straight, and then 16 to 1 is a reasonably long straight.
Mm.
And when the weather's cool, Pirelli expects serious graining on the tyres. This is going to have a massive effect, I think, on especially the teams running the softer tyres.
Well, let's look at who's good at keeping their tyres in check. McLaren. Checo Perez.
Yeah, the only reason McLaren are good at keeping their tyres is because, one, they never keep finishing races.
Well, they don't put any energy into them.
When
Jensen has loads of tyres at the end of the last race.
When Jensen has a running car. But it looks like drivers that are good with the tyres will get an advantage.
When Jensen has a running car, I fear he might be an LMP1. Carry on.
Well, yeah, I'll finish the point. But yeah, the drivers that can keep the tyres will definitely have a bit of an advantage over, shall we say, the slightly wilder runners.
Yeah.
So we've got this long straight, which is going to be tough on teams that don't have ERS sorted out.
Yeah.
We've got lots of corners, which is going to be good for teams who can manage their tyres. Is it going to be a good McLaren circuit or a bad McLaren circuit?
It's a circuit. It's going to be a bad McLaren circuit.
Well, I don't know. Who's going to be driving the second McLaren?
Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
It's Monday before the race and he's not been passed yet. I think he's getting checked over again on Thursday. He's gone to China.
He's gone to China and he posted up some very exposing photos on Instagram.
Oh, not
training
gym. Gym selfies.
Not gym selfies. No, somebody arty photos of Fernando Alonso in the gym wearing a didn't even need to be a vest. It's one of these vests where the straps cover the nipples and then it sort of comes together just
like
above the belly.
That's a mankini.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. He's like back in the gym getting ready for China. It's like no one needs to see that, Nando.
You're trying to say he was a cheeky Nando.
It was a cheeky Nando. Wait a second. My phone is dead. I'm going to try and show you. My phone is dead, so you guys should be thankful for that.
We should put, Paul, I think we've found a picture for the podcast this week.
Yep, it's Fernando from Fernando Alonso's official Instagram account.
We will use an officially supplied photo by one of the teams or Pirelli.
Uh-huh.
Maybe mainly to save ourselves from seeing what Chris has just described. I don't fancy that.
I want an alternative collector's edition cover.
Make your own. Another classic from Paul Hembury at Pirelli. China is a very different type of circuit to the two that we've visited up to now this year. Yet the tyre nomination is the same.
It's a different country.
Yeah.
So basically, it's completely different to the first two circuits.
Have the same tyres.
Have the same tyres as the first two circuits. Has he lost the plot?
It's because the kitten softs aren't ready.
Yeah, but Italian tyres wouldn't use kitten softs anyway, would they?
No, they're not coming until Canada anyway.
But if it's hard on tyres, why not use the hard, medium, and soft?
Yeah,
but they had an excess of super softs in the factory.
Yeah, but they're throwing a tyre in there that degrades, aren't they? Fair play.
It's going to certainly tyre strategy is going to make it a lot more exciting.
I like this tyre strategy though. This is good. They're using at least two of the three available compounds.
Do you know what the crazy thing is? The best new rule to come into Formula for ages and it was a fucking accident.
Yeah, it was.
Looking at Pirelli's tyre selections, we'll get to see the hard tyres in Spain at the expense of the super softs. And they still haven't officially said what's going to be used in Monaco.
They have said that the kitten softs will be used there.
They're still claiming that the kitten soft debut is going to be in Canada. Monaco just has a complete blank for what tyres are going to be available. This is from Pirelli's official release.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. They may have said, but they haven't officially said. Pirelli's press department, especially Paul Hendry,
Is the tyres they're asked for after Monaco?
Yep, Canada, Kitten Soft, Super Soft and Soft, and Europe by Jan, Super Soft, Soft and Medium.
Europe by Jan sounds like a kind of high-end designer perfume.
By Jan. For Hom.
Queens of the Stone Age use it? Yeah. I've had enough tangents for tonight.
I think so.
Right, so just to recap,
bold predictions.
Bold predictions. Send those to us on Twitter or by email. Mm-hmm. Your voice in F1. Use the hashtag. Twitter address is @3legs4wheels. Drop us an email, 3legs4wheels@gmail.com. Visit the site and leave comments there. Of course, me and Chris will be doing the live blog early hours of Sunday morning our time, 7 a.m. start. For the race, so we'll probably be blogging from 6 and drinking lots and lots of coffee.
Yeah.
And leave us a review on iTunes as well if you get a chance. That's another place where you can leave your voice in F1 comments as well, because there's plenty of space to write comments in there. Yeah,
we will hammer this your voice thing again next week as well. And the I feel like we're building quite a nice community at the minute, you know, with the letters and stuff we're getting.
Yeah, just want to thank everyone for the emails and tweets that they're sending us so far. You know, please keep it up, because
I'm really surprised.
We may take the piss, but we do enjoy hearing from you.
Absolutely,
not surprised by so much, but the the quality of letters we've had, and the quality of comments within those letters. I'm not trying to polish.
You only think that because you used to reading your YouTube comments.
Well, yeah, see, exactly. No, but it is. It's nice to get stuff through that isn't, well, I think this is all fucking stupid and I won't be watching for the next 100 years.
But everything we've had has been...
Contextual.
When it's been negative, there's been a context behind the negative, and we've had a lot of positive comments about the state of F1 as well.
This is the thing with the your voice thing. I don't expect people to agree with me. I don't expect anyone to agree with me. If you completely agree with me, you're wrong. But we need valuable opinions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we can't thank you enough for the valuable opinions that you've given us already. Just as an aside, I want to thank Cloud Above Web Hosting for the support that they've been giving to us recently. Doing a fantastic job. And if you're looking for web hosting for your own website, blog, podcast, go to cloudabove.com and tell them the 3legs4wheels sent you, and they will be glad to help.
Excellent.
Cloud Cheers, above. Guys. Sky's the limit.
Lee. Say goodnight, Lee.
Goodnight, Lee.
We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye.